One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Big Interview Bite Size. I'm Graham Hunter, and in each episode, you'll hear an elite footballer tell a story that's guaranteed to brighten your day. All of them come from my podcast, The Big Interview with Graham Hunter, which you can find by searching on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Darren Fletcher, we hear about what it's like to not play against Barca, but instead to watch and to wish that you were in a Champions League final to boot.
I expect that aside from that passion to lift the cup and to play in that game and to fulfill a boyhood dream, the competitor in you and the analyst in you would have been looking at those two Barcelona sides. I'm leaving Moscow aside now, because effectively you're a Champions League winner. I might ask in a minute how you feel about that, but the history books will always say, you know, Dan Fletcher was part of a Champions League winning squad. But analytically, I'm fairly sure you'd have liked to have done what Jose was talking about there and set yourself about stopping what Alex said, you know, they'll kill you with your passing. And from my humble point of view, even if he listens to this, I think particularly in 2011, you picked the wrong team. You weren't available in 2009, so you couldn't rescind the red card. But boy, they got a lot of space in the two games. Now, I've followed Alex Ferguson's career closer than he has. And to hear Alex Ferguson say, after Rome, that goal after 9 minutes killed us. And that's the most atypical Alex Ferguson phrase ever. How can an Alex Ferguson team be beaten after 9 minutes at 1-0? But it was because that team wouldn't give the ball back. And I think both in 2009 and 11, when we spoke a lot before Wembley, and I was convinced that you were going to make it and that you would make a difference. I think, genuinely, I thought, maybe you think you're laughing at me now, maybe you think it's not your place to say it, but I think United would have been a damn sight closer to winning it had you been doing what you've just talked about, which was your art of making sure the good players can't play as well as they want to. That must be a separate frustration that you didn't get at. Test yourself against Xavi and Iniesta and Messi at their best and maybe beat them.
No, I think in 2009, I think it was a big part of our game plan and the way we, me not being there, as I spoke about, being the one to set a tempo and how we beat Arsenal in the semi-finals and how we, you know, we were relentless in pressing and getting against them and setting a tempo in the match. And I personally think we were favourites in that final. I know a lot of people won't believe it, but in going in 2009, I felt like, I think maybe that, not that we didn't respect Barcelona, but there was no fear of Barcelona at that time. And I think that might have ultimately helped us go in and win the match. They weren't regarded as the great team as they were. They were on the, they were going towards that. That was almost like the game stamped it.
Totally right.
And we felt, I felt we would still win the game even without me. And I think the manager speaks about people not following the game plan to the letter. And we might get away with that in other games, but maybe you don't get away with it in Champions League final. And he still holds true that the players didn't fulfil what was expected of them or what was asked of them in the game. And maybe we did change the style and we would play because I wasn't in midfield. And I think we did a little bit because we didn't really go to relentlessly press them and stop them playing as maybe we should have or could have. I regret it because I feel like I could have made a difference. Yeah. I know people laugh at that.
No, I asked you the question and I'm saying it sincerely.
Yeah.
It's not praise because we're sitting across the table. I think if somebody can't see that, they don't watch football very well. Mm. Not just because of what you did or what Man United played like, but what Barcelona don't like. all right, neither of us can say you'd have won the game. You wouldn't have won the game. But if you even look at how the first goal comes and the amount of room that a 60% fit Andres Iniesta has to run with the ball before feeding it to Eto'o. Again, from my point of view. Now, it didn't mean no harm as a freelance journalist in Barcelona for them to win it. So I'm not actually saying I regret it, but it sticks out a mile.
Yeah, exactly. And we start the game so well. And, you know, in 2009, I was physically very, very, you know, powerful and box to box, and stamina levels were very, very high. I was, you know, I'd started to get a bit of strength, and, you know, not being the biggest physique in ever, and I could have done it for 90 minutes, pressed and closed down and harried and made it so difficult. And the team was built to play that day. That's how we got to the final. You know, Carlos Tevez, Wayne Rooney, you know, they could run and press all day. We had the capabilities of doing it, but we didn't follow our game plan, and we started the game very well and should go in the lead. But it's true, in the both games, for 20 minutes we managed to be able to sort of impact the game, but over 90 we just couldn't do it. And ultimately, especially in 2011, they completely dominated and controlled the game.
That's because
I don't think I was physically able to do it in 2011. I'd just come back from my illness, the first bout of it, and looking back, I was very fortunate to even make the bench. I think in your head you think you are, but looking back, I don't think I was physically at a point where I could have done what I'd have liked to have done in that final.
In life, you know, you've beaten the illness. It was a debilitating, depressing, horrible experience for you and your family. But you have beaten it. You're healthy, you're fit, you're young, you're talented. So rubbish though that experience was, you know, we move on and life is good. But if you look at 2011, if you look and say, my illness meant I couldn't have been the real Dan Fletcher on the pitch. So therefore, without saying you were a spectator, tell me a little bit about, because I think I've never heard an outpouring of praise for a football match, maybe with the exception of when I was growing up in 1970, for that game in particular. And Man United fans would text me or go on Twitter and say, we were well beaten. No soreness, like almost like it was good to watch them. What were the things about that side as you watched them? What was that experience of being close but not involved in that greatest club team ever, maybe, that night at Wembley? What do you think of them?
It was the ultimate performance, as well as the ultimate, you know, so you can have great teams, but they put in the ultimate performance on the ultimate stage, the Champions League final, and they performed to the highest level I think they could. And I think for the great team to do that on such an occasion, I think it speaks volumes as well. You know, we get great performances, they can happen in league matches, they can happen in group stages of the Champions League. But for them to execute in a Champions League final the way we did, we didn't lay a glove on that night. We scored a fantastic goal.
It's an unbelievably good goal, isn't it?
And I think I can't remember too many other chances apart from that. And it took us scoring a fantastic goal to get a goal. And it was almost like it's undefendable, the goal. I think if Barcelona even look at it, the move, 1-2, the way we scored, the finish, everything about it, that speaks volumes of the match, that it took us scoring an unbelievable passing, one touch move and an unbelievable finish to get one goal in the match when the rest of the time we didn't really lay a glove on them.
I think it's reminded me of the 2009 discussion we just had, because you score the goal because of the brilliant, I can't remember who presses, but I think it's a Barcelona throw-in, and United press down your right hand side and press and win it at pace, getting to the ball quickly, getting in, the ball's away, and then suddenly bish bash bosh and Wayne does something beautiful. But I mean, to me, that still says 2009, 2011, had you been not suspended or fully fit in 2011, I can see in that little incident the difference it might have made. I was speaking to Abidal the other day, who came through a similar experience to you, in that, you know, he'd fought back from a tumour. He'd left a note to himself. I don't know if you know this. He played England at Wembley before he was diagnosed with his tumour in 2010, that season. And he said that they had a fad for doing that, the French team. They would leave themselves notes. If they were playing the Stade de France and they were going to be back there for a major qualifier or there was a big cup final, they would leave a note to themselves, tuck it away, see if anybody found it, like kids, really. But Abidal left himself a little note in winter 2010 when France beat England 2-1. Benzema scored and he went, I am coming back. This note is to you. I'll be here in May. And he went back and it had been tidied up. It had been cleaned. It had been taken away. But on that night, you wouldn't have been conscious of it at the time, but you must have been conscious later that Puyol and Xavi got together and said to lads, we're going to have Abidal, the arm man, he's going to lift the cup because he's just beaten cancer. Maybe that sounds obvious to do, but to me, I think it's not a lot of people in football would do that. you can't get Platini or Blatter out of the trophy shop because they want to be still holding it, the idiots that they are. But they were like, I tell you what, the greatest moment of our lives, let's give it to the French guy.
Yeah.
You've been in dressing rooms all your life. What does that make you feel like? What do you think of that gesture?
I think it speaks volume for the team that they had, the morale they had, what leaders they were. And, you know, to win the Champions League, to be captain, that's what you think about, to go and lift the trophy. And to give that up, everyone might say that's because they've done it before or whatever, but to give that up to someone, I think it shows the power of football. And I experienced it with my illness, about how people contact that you would never believe and wish you luck and think about you and ask you how you're doing in certain situations. And I think it puts rivalry aside, it puts winning stuff aside, and it puts somebody who's ultimately could have lost their life and who's showed determination and courage to battle back, and then for his teammates to give him that honour to go and lift the Champions League for Barcelona, you know, I think it maybe speaks volumes of why they were such a great team as well.